Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help. So you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the fourth edition of Red Lake Roundtable. I'm really thrilled today to be joined from out in Arizona, Adam Rosales, former Red. Adam, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, Adam, I really appreciate it. I wanted you to tell me just maybe a little bit about memories of the Reds, the organization, playing for the team, just that kind of thing.
Oh, my goodness, where do I start? You know, I got drafted by the Reds, by the Cincinnati Reds. That first day that I got drafted was amazing to see that Major League logo right next to my name, Adam Rosales, mm-hmm. Cincinnati Reds. And just the people that I met there when I was a rookie in rookie ball in Billings, Montana. All the coaches I've met, you know, Rick Burleson was my manager there, and Freddie Benavides was the infield coordinator. I know he's the first base coach now, but just people like that just embraced me and embraced the way I play the game, and it was kind of an easy transition from college into professional baseball. I just feel like I fit right in with the Reds' philosophy of playing the game.
Yeah, and we'll get through that a little bit. I was looking at your numbers and things like that. Very impressive, obviously, with the way you track through the system. Now, you know, I talk to baseball guys all the time, and it's this idea of a lot of times the guys from the South or the West maybe had a leg up because of warm weather year-round, that kind of thing. You were born on May 20th, 1983 in Chicago. So you didn't have that Southern climate, but you went to Main Township High School in Park Ridge, Illinois. Is that like a suburb of Chicago?
Yeah, it's right by O'Hare Airport.
Okay, sure. And but then you attended Western Michigan University. What was your matriculation over to Western Michigan? What was that like, and how'd you end up there?
So I only had three offers to play Division I baseball: Eastern Illinois, Illinois State, and Western Michigan. It would have been easy just to stay in state, especially for my parents, you know, with the tuition and everything, to stay in Illinois. But Coach Fred Decker, when I met him and the confidence that he had in me right away, I felt it. He was giving me the opportunity. It wasn't given to me, but he said that I could possibly be the starting shortstop as a freshman. Where the other colleges were like, you're probably going to redshirt. I'm like, I just want to play. And Fred Decker just always had confidence in me. And the coaching that he gave me was unbelievable. So I decided to go to Western Michigan. And it was just an unbelievable 4 years of my life.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. So, and obviously, is that Kalamazoo?
Yeah.
I guess, what did you think of you know, the college town, the college experience? You feel like you had a typical college, you know?
Yeah, pretty typical. You know, the guys, those are like my brothers now. You know, like, I call them up, I get to chat with them every now and then. But those are like my brothers, the best way I can explain it. Just those relationships that I've built with those guys are, you know, everlasting, you know?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So you mentioned you were drafted by the Reds. That was the 12th round in the 2005 draft. What was draft day like? I know certainly today the top round guys might even be over in New Jersey at MLB Network and things like that. But but you get picked in the 12th round. What was it like? How did you find out?
Oh my goodness. It was one of the most thrilling days of my life. It was June 7th, 2005. And my mom and my cousin Noah, they were watching the draft as it was, you know, they were selecting players. And I'm like, guys, I'm not going the first day. You might just want to wait till tomorrow. And then they actually started screaming. I didn't even see it until they're like, oh my gosh, your name popped up, you know. It was and I just went and from that moment I went with my brother and my cousin. We went out to the ball field and started playing ball. I was just so geeked.
Oh yeah,
like to play some ball. But now, as a coach, I'm coaching in the Oakland A's organization now. I managed the last 3 years in rookie ball, so I get to see these draft guys come in. Mm-hmm. And I always look for the 12th round draft pick. Want to tell him he's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. You know, give him some kind of confidence.
Yeah, and certainly 12th round, there's no guarantees, right? I mean, right. your work kind of started probably that day. I mean, you said you went out to the field right away. But hey, man, you know, it's only 3 years later you make your major league debut. Technically, August 9th, 2008, you get to play in your first game. What was that like?
Unbelievable. Well, Jerry Nering was the manager, my first big league spring training experience.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was the year after I was playing at Western Michigan. I'm in the Reds dugout at Ed Smith Stadium, and the Yankees are out on the field. Wow. We're about to play the Yankees, and Jaron Nering called me over. He said, hey, last year you were in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and now you get to play against the New York Yankees. How do you feel? So, and then obviously Derek Jeter, you know, he was raised in Kalamazoo, and just that connection. It was pretty cool. It's just amazing the journey that I got to go on.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess let's talk a little bit about minor league life. How did it compare to, you know, college at Western Michigan? I don't know how the travel would have been different. What was it like?
I feel like I had the advantage, to be honest with you, because, you know, a lot of these kids that come from really prestigious schools, mm-hmm. And Western Michigan is a great school. But we only have like 8 fans in the stands, and there's like only parents, and it's freezing outside. When guys coming from LSU, Arizona State, they have a student section, you know?
Yeah.
They actually got some energy at the game. So when we actually had 1,000 fans in the stands in Billings, I was geeked. My hair was on fire. I was like, this is great. But all these other guys like, oh my gosh, we got to go to the minor league stuff. But I embraced it. I loved it. I mean, the fans, you know, when they're in the stands are great, but just the game itself, you know, I just always had such a deep respect for the game of baseball, and just getting to pro ball, I embraced it. I loved every moment of it. No matter if we're eating at midnight at random Denny's in a random town, I just embraced every moment. And the reason why I did was because the guys that I was with, my teammates that I was with, just they're in the same boat I was in, and we just kind of helped each other out the best we could.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, certainly positive mindset alone will probably help you. And you were kind of well known for being more upbeat, I guess, than maybe most guys or that kind of thing. Let's talk about even go back to Billings. Who are some of the guys that you were in Billings with? Some names we'd recognize.
Well, I remember Travis Wood, one of the pitchers, Johnny Cueto was there. And then later that season, Jay Bruce came, Josh Renicki, a couple of these guys. I'm trying to think of other guys that I was there with, but those are the guys that stand out right away that, you know, made it to the major leagues at least.
When you talk about Jay Bruce, and maybe we'll chat a little more later about in the big leagues with him, but he was that guy, right? The top draft pick, all that stuff. What was it like to kind of see a guy that, I mean, did he stand out that way, right, when he got there? If you didn't know he was that high draft pick, would he have stood out in that way?
Well, not on the field. On the field, he did. Like, off the field, super humble, very great guy with everybody, great teammate. Have a ton of respect for Bruce. On the field, the way the ball came off his bat, how fast he was running, how smooth he was, how strong his arm was, how his instincts in the game were, mm-hmm. blew everybody out of the water. You know, it was just, it was really fun to watch how advanced he was.
Well, and even he was a high school kid. So, you know, you and some of your other teammates maybe had gone through at least a couple years of college, and here he was just fresh out of high school. So that, I mean, I guess if you can see that, that's definitely awesome. And certainly we saw it as fans when he got to come up.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your 2008. You played nearly a full season at Louisville. That's the AAA team, obviously. I am good friends with Matt Andrews. I don't know if you remember that, the announcer. I went to college with him. He was in my wedding. And actually, I got down there a time or two. I was working with local media here in Columbus, Ohio, and I came down and interviewed Tom Schoen because he was from Columbus, and he made that run up where he got called up.
Yeah.
You know, you led the team in at-bats and hits that year. You had 124 hits in only 117 games. You led the team in doubles. You hit 287. You got on base. And I actually reached out to Matt Andrews and asked him a little bit about you. And he said you were a crowd favorite. And he also said that you helped kind of spur those three consecutive division titles that manager Rick Sweet. They called it the Sweet Three-peat. Tell me a little bit about that season, if you remember much about it, and kind of you know, life in Louisville.
It was a magical season.
Yeah.
To say the least, that was the season that got me over the hump in my career. Because, I climbed up really quick in the Reds organization. A lot of player development helped me out. But in 2008, not many people know. I mean, if you look deeper into the stats, in June or in July, late in the season, I was hitting a buck 80 something, buck 90 something. And I think they were talking about sending me back to AA.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. And that's what I would tell a lot of young kids. Like, you don't know how close you really are. But, you know, I started doing more like the mental side of the game. I really started tapping into that, you know, Gary Mack's book, Mind Gym. I started reading that again. But I really started focusing on the important things in baseball. I started understanding how important a routine is, not just a routine, but a working routine. And my hitting coach, Smokey Garrett, Adrian Garrett, you know, I love that man so much. Just the way he was with me in the batting cage, the patience he had with me, the wisdom that he gave me, helped me understand what kind of player I could be. Another guy, Andy Green, right? He's the, I believe, still the, oh, maybe he's not the bench coach for the Cubs anymore, but he was the bench coach for the Cubs last couple of years. He was my teammate in Louisville, and I remember I was struggling. We're both competing for the same job. He pulls me aside and says, "You're better than this. You know you could play to a higher potential." And after we had that conversation, I started playing a lot better, just knowing that people were in my corner. I started believing that, started trusting that. I mean, I was just an inch away from my ultimate dream, and that was playing one game in the major leagues. That's all I wanted to do. But it's you're so close, but yet so far, and you got to make sure that you are super focused, not just every day, but every single pitch. And I was hyper-focused on every single pitch, and I turned it around. Yeah, I remember that Rick Sweet and I still talk about the time we were in Toledo, and Toledo was up on us in the division, and we came back and won that game. I hit I think it was a 3-run homer to tie it or give us the lead on a slider in Toledo, and it was kind of like a turning point of our season, I felt like, and it started that Sweet three-peat. But that 2008 season, I can go on for days talking about how magical that truly was personally for me. But it was awesome to be a part of that. And obviously Rick Sweet, it was cool when he called me up to the major leagues. You know, that was really well done by him and my teammates.
How did that happen? Tell me a little bit about that.
So I was in the batting cage by myself, just working, you know, just working, doing my daily routine. And I come back from the batting cage and there's nobody in the clubhouse. I'm like, what, this is kind of weird. Something's amiss here. And Rick Sweet comes out of nowhere. He starts yelling at me like, "You're late to practice. You're late to stretch again." I'm like, well, I'm never late to stretch. He's like, you know what? I'm sick of this. Pack your bags. You're going to Cincinnati. And then a couple of teammates like jumped out of the lockers or jumped out behind walls and stuff. And it was pretty sweet the way he did it. It was really special. And just that's one moment in my life where time just stopped for me.
Yeah.
And I'm a Cincinnati Red in the major leagues. It's super special.
You know, you were talking about how things can change even within the middle of a season. I was thinking about that the other day. I was listening to a few things on how much this current Reds team coming up with so many young guys. Like, what's this guy going to do? What do we expect out of this guy? And certainly when the season's over, those numbers get stamped on the baseball card and that's your numbers, right? But day to day, the important thing, especially I would think for a young player, would be to understand that, you know, I might be really down right now, but that doesn't mean I can't pull it back up. And what you just told me is a testimony to that. That's for sure.
There's no question. This game is all about momentum, right? And having confidence. You know, if you can get that momentum, it's going to be like stopping a semi-truck. It's going to be really hard, or stopping a freight train.
Yeah.
Once you get that momentum in this game and you're confident and you're sure and you surround yourself with the right people and you trust your coaches, it's going to be a game changer. You can do some special stuff when that happens.
Well, no doubt. Let's talk about a few of those guys. We already talked a little bit about Jay Bruce. He was on that 08 team with you in part. And then tell me a little bit about, you played with Drew Stubbs. He has certainly had a good career in the major leagues. What was he like? Was he as fast as what we remember him as?
He was just like a deer running around and just smooth. Everything he did
effortless,
was smooth.
Yeah.
Yeah, effortless. And another great kid, another Texas kid, right?
University of Texas. Yeah.
Yeah, University of Texas. Just a fantastic kid, hard worker, focused, determined. These are the things I just remember about Drew Stubbs, and just had a, you know, solid relationship with him as well.
And then, you know, there's a subset of Reds fans who have a real soft spot in their hearts for Paul Janisch. He was such a good defender at shortstop, and he was on that team with you as well.
Yeah, Janisch. You know, he was always ahead of me. You know, he was the shortstop ahead of me, and the respect that we had for each other. As we're going up to the system, and just, you know, he just really, talk about a great teammate, just the way he is with other people and how smart he was. Another Texas guy,
yeah.
You know, he went to Rice University. And just that's like the sixth tool, you know, I feel like in baseball, you know, you got the five tool player, but the sixth tool is the intelligence, the baseball IQ, the way you are with your teammates, the leadership. Talk about Paul Janisch and the leadership that he had at all times. Just a solid human being, and has a great family too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Dickerson, even I remember he came up that year, the year after, and even then he's advocating for conservation and not being wasteful and recycling and things like that. Even, you know, he's got to worry about being a big leaguer or staying in the big leagues. And yet he was sticking his neck out to try to, you know, go behind a cause he believed in.
Yeah, no, he does a great job. I know he's still dealing with that for the planet. And he's another good leader. These guys are, and that's the coolest thing about playing Major League Baseball, even playing minor league baseball, like playing college ball. You learn these leadership skills and the qualities, these character traits that these young men have, and that they're determined to do great things with their lives, you know, and you just want to surround yourself with people like that.
Would you say kind of experience and all that, even from your coaches, but also those fellow players that were leaders, is that kind of go into the mix to make you the coach you are today?
Well, no question. I mean, talk about a guy like Paul Janisch, you know, how smart he was. I mean, there's many other teammates like him that I had that if I was just observing or if I had a conversation with, just the way they go about their business, the patience that they have, the way they know how to listen and to implement what they learn. A lot of great leadership skills that you learn from players, and you just try to emulate what they kind of do and do your best to implement that.
You were also around Homer Bailey, and certainly at that time, I remember – the meteoric rise he had up through the system, you know, that was kind of like a rock star status, wasn't it? Like he was, And the Reds certainly had gone through a time when they didn't have as many homegrown starting pitchers. So he was the lone guy at that point. Did you sense the pressure that was kind of on him and the things he was dealing with?
Well, he always was confident in himself. You know, he always was sure of what he had to get done. And talk about a hard worker, determined, focused. No, he was great. Actually, he came to the A's. Was it last year or two years ago? He came to, like, he was like a free agent, and he came to do like some. I think he pitched in AAA for the A's for a little bit. I might be wrong about that, but yeah, he was down in the ACL rehabbing, or not rehabbing, but like getting ready to condition his arm, and he was pitching for my team during the ACL season or the extended spring training season, and I'm his manager now. Right? his pitch count is up, so I walk out to the mound to get the ball from him because his pitch count's up, and I said, "Homer, I never thought this would happen in my life, but I got to take you out of the game." It kind of just, he was really focused. Yeah. I don't know if you didn't think that was too funny, but he just, you know, he does what he does. He takes baseball really seriously. And he was, always respected that about Homer Bailey.
Well, and certainly he's the type of guy who, you know, like I said, the expectations were so high. And maybe at first some fans didn't necessarily say, oh, he met these expectations, but eventually he did. It paid off in a big way. He threw two no-hitters. He was part of that staff in 2012 and 13 that made all those starts. They were so reliable. It's the exact opposite. You know, the Great American Ballpark with the short fences and things like that, right. People always thought, well, you're never going to have good pitching here. And, boy, if you look at the numbers, look at Baseball Reference in 2012 and 13, that staff with Bailey and Latos and Bronson Arroyo and Cueto and those guys. I mean, it was unbelievable. And Mike Leake, and certainly, but you know, just amazing the way they were able to come through. And he was right there with them through, like you said, the two no hitters, got the next contract and all that. You had guys like Aaron Harang, David Weathers, Kent Merker, David Ross, Jeff Kepinger. They all kind of came down maybe during injury rehabs or those kind of things. Can you tell me a little bit about being in AAA and having big leaguers come down? Like, what's that like? Do all the guys gather around and try to pick their brains and things like that? And, you know, I know, like, if you watch Bull Durham, you know, they're all trying to find out from Crash Davis what it's like in the show.
Yeah, you do your best. Me, I was kind of like, I don't know, kind of let them do their thing. And that's what kind of like they're down there. And just how respectful they are. I know I keep saying the word respect a lot, but I feel like that's a lot in the Cincinnati Reds organization. There's a lot of respect, but guys like that, you would come down and you would see them and you would be like, oh my goodness. Like, and they're just humans, you know, they kind of like, they encourage to give you some kind of encouragement that you're really close to get here. And then when you actually do get there, they embrace you like you've been there for 10 years already, you know? Yeah, but there, you know, I got to know Kepinger, got to learn from him. Got, you know, he was always like that, kind of like my role in a sense. Like he was more of an everyday player, but more like a utility, super utility type player. But yeah, just the way he played the game was fun to watch. I always respected that.
When you keep talking about respect and those kind of things and the way the organization was, we're talking about the doorstep there of winning the division 2 out of 3 years, 2010. 2012 and 2013. Well, they made the playoffs in 2013. So that was the seeds of coming up through and really creating that atmosphere of being a better team, wasn't it? So, like, I guess all this makes sense now when you boil it down and look at what was happening in AAA back in 08.
Right, exactly. I think the whole system. My experience with player development and the Cincinnati Reds organization was, I mean, it was a perfect fit for me, for myself. Mm-hmm. And it just, I appreciate it every day, you know?
We mentioned you got called up in 08 there. You told the story about how you got the news. What was it like then going on up to the big leagues? And kind of, you know, do you remember much about the day you played in the first game and all that?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. How do I explain it? It's just kind of like out-of-body experience when you walk into that clubhouse. Just – you could just smell the big leagues, you know. Like, it just smelled like just – everything's just pristine, everything, and there's more people helping you now,
right?
You know, like, they're, you know, they have a lot of metrics nowadays, a lot of guys that do all the break down the all the stats and everything. they had some guys that would do that, but it was not like it was before, but still like resources like that, mm-hmm. that were there for you. There's more trainers, there's more coaches that help you out. So that was kind of, you know, it's like it's luxurious to have that. It's like, how do you fail in the big leagues? You got everything you need, right? And then obviously like the travel, I don't know how the travel works, you know, until I get there, you get off the bus, off the steps, and you walk right up the steps onto a plane, and there's food waiting for you on the plane. I'm like,
right.
Where, like, I can never go back to AAA now. You know?
Yeah, I heard somebody the other day talking about how everything is better, and everything is like, it makes it easier, I guess, until you step on the field and actually have to dig in against somebody. I mean, Roy Oswalt or whoever else at the time would have been pitching to you. Like, it's just like, oh my goodness. So tell me a little bit about the first at bat or the first game. What was that part of it like?
It was with Texas. It was against not Texas. It was Houston,
mm-hmm.
and a big ratty Paulino.
I believe his name was.
And I had it was a pinch hit. Dusty, talk about. I mean, Dusty, what a manager. I mean, love that man. But he put me in a pinch hit. Big ratty Paulino from Houston throws me a first pitch. There was like a 96 mile per hour fastball, and I crush it. I caught a lot of barrel. I shouldn't say I crushed it. I caught a lot of barrel. And it flew to right field. And the right fielder's going back. And I'm like, I think I got it. He jumps up and catches it at the wall.
Oh, man.
And you know, like me, so I love sprinting bases around the home, you know, sprinting around the bases on a home run. And I'm already like around second base at this time when the guy in right field catches it. And I come running off the field. And all the fans in the front row, a couple rows back, are all cheering for me just because they knew that was my first at bat, and the energy that I brought was pretty special.
Well, and I guess you've opened the door then. Certainly, you were known if you did catch one to go first to home faster than anybody. They would even time you, I remember, and Chris Welsh was one of the TV announcers. He'd talk about it. He'd have his little stopwatch going. What was that? What was that like? I mean, I guess you just felt like you had to run hard during every play, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I started doing it when I was a kid, you know, that's when I was 12 years old, I hit my first home run over a fence, and the first home run I hit, I just kind of jogged around the bases and it didn't feel right. You know? So I'm like, from now on, instead of jogging, I'm going to sprint around the bases. And that was when I was 12 years old, you know, I had like the intuition to say, you know what, that could have just barely clipped the fence. I could have been standing on first base. I should be on third base, you know? Mm-hmm. So from that day forward, from when I was 12 years old and on, I made a promise to myself, if I got to play at a higher level, I would play the same way I did when I was 12 years old. So basically it was a promise that I kept to myself, really, mm-hmm. that I would play the same way as you see hopefully kids nowadays play, mm-hmm. really. Like they really love the game.
And let's be honest, you were playing in Cincinnati. So with Pete Rose's persona all around that stadium and the city itself, he grew up there, he played there. You know, that was all it's always like endearing from the fans to the player that runs hard, that tries hard, that does all that. Like you were a crowd favorite immediately because of that.
Yeah. They made a joke a couple times. They called me Pete Rosales. Thought that was kind of funny, but they do appreciate that. I think fans really do appreciate that. They can see it, they sense it, they sense when somebody's got that pure love of the game, that passion for the game.
Absolutely. You spent a lot of 2009 on the big league roster in Cincinnati, and actually Baseball Reference, if you go to the seasons, the player that plays the most of the position or something like that, that's where you know they list what they call starters or whatever. And you were the main third baseman on that list. And I know you came into the minor leagues as a college shortstop, but you mentioned being more of a utility player. You know, what was it like to maybe find a little bit of a home there and play quite a bit of third base for a major league team?
Yeah, I think I remember that year Jeff Kepinger went to Houston at spring training, I believe. He got traded. And so they opened up a spot, kind of. But I still didn't make the team
mm-hmm.
out of spring training. And then Edwin Encarnacion got hurt. And that left the door wide open for me. Dusty gave me the opportunity to play third base almost every day. you know? So, yeah, you got to take advantage of those opportunities. You know, it started becoming more real to me too. That first rookie year, especially where I come from, is kind of, like I said, out of body experience. You know, there's times where I'm facing Kerry Wood. He was pitching for the Indians at the time. It was a big game between whatever the Ohio.
Battle of Ohio.
Cincinnati and Cleveland are playing each other, and I'm facing Kerry Wood, who I just watched back in 2003 on my Western Michigan. You know, they got that where they almost went to the World Series. I think it was the NLCS they were going to. Anyway, remember, so facing Kerry Wood, that was like one of the times where I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm really here. I'm starting almost every day. Let's keep it going, kind of thing. It's like it's pretty amazing feeling trying to establish yourself in the major leagues, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course, later that season, a guy named Scott Rowland came over in a trade. So right. I guess he played a little more third base the rest of the year. Certainly, that was a big trade. I mean, I spoke last week with Scott Hattieburg, and we talked a little bit about the fact that Edwin Encarnacion became this amazing player. And he certainly, if you dig into his numbers with the Reds, he was so young, like in 06, or he's only 23, I think.
Right.
And yet there, if you really dig into those numbers, you can see like almost the sprouting of what he actually eventually became. And you always, right. I wonder as a fan, hey, did they give up a little early on the guy? And certainly Scott Rowland was an important cog to those next couple of years though.
Yeah. Right. Oh my goodness. And Scott Rowland, Hall of Famer. I'm so happy for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was great with me too. You know, a lot of guys, as I grew older, I noticed a lot of guys like to do their work on their own.
Yeah.
You know, before the pregame stuff, like get their stuff done and then get to their, go to bat in practice, whatever. But he was always welcoming me to work with me. He always gave me great tips about playing third base. Mm-hmm. And he was like, there's times where he was firm. You know, like this is what you should expect as a third baseman. It's just a Hall of Fame moment, man. Like to get that kind of coaching from your own teammate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just invaluable, right? Just to be in that presence and learning that much. So now I try to apply to my career, but now I can pass that down to these players I work with now.
Well, you always ran so hard yourself, as we've already talked about, but you know, the thing in my mind of that, I remember in 2010 in the All-Star game, Rowland and Votto and Brandon Phillips were all there. And they had, maybe even it was, one of them was mic'd. And I think Phillips was mic'd in the dugout. And Rowland goes first to third in an All-Star game. And that was first to third. That's what we do in Cincinnati, you know. And yeah. How true was it that he just stepped in and kind of laid down the law, I guess, and set that example immediately?
There's such a presence about Scott Rowland.
Yeah.
Talk about his leadership skills and the way he communicates with his teammates, the way he communicates with his manager. It is – he just does it the right way, you know. And it starts – we talk about respecting the game. There's no other person I know that respects the game as much as Scott Rowland does, you know, and it's just, it shows.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly amazing, amazing. And now that he's in, that's awesome. Now listen, you went on to play 11 years in the big leagues, you know, throughout time there. You played in 651 major league games. From 2016 to 2018, you played in over 100 games a year, which I would call that more super utility role than just utility. Can you reflect a little bit on over a decade of at least, you know, partially, you know, big league baseball?
Yeah. I mean, I got really good at being able to do that role. I feel like the older I got, I'm like, I started understanding that this role is not easy to do. This is actually a pretty special niche.
Right.
And then I'm actually doing it. And the reason why I was able to do it, it's actually advice from Joey Votto that he gave me and when I was actually playing. I was playing with the Reds, but we were playing here in Arizona at Chase Field, and I was struggling, and Votto came up to me and said, hey, can you do me a favor? Like, whatever you want, Joey. He said, can you be patient with yourself? And I just took that, like, whenever you get like a nugget like that from your teammate, it can come from somebody else on the street and you won't take it the same way. But when it comes like that from your teammate, someone that's in the trenches with you, in the foxhole with you, you take that, you digest it, and you make sure you do it. Mm-hmm. So be patient with yourself. And I learned how to be more patient. I was reminded often through my career to be patient. And it always went back to Joey Votto telling me that. It always stuck true to my brain.
Yeah.
To be patient. And that's what helped me be a decent super utility player that I can be serviceable to a major league team, is that I was patient to wait my turn. You know, in Texas, you got Adrian Beltre at third base. You got Elvis Andrews at short. Ian Kinsler at second. Mitch Moreland at first.
Wow, yeah.
I wasn't going to see the infield for maybe 2 weeks on end, you know?
Right.
So talk about being patient and making sure you're working your tail off in batting practice or seeing live pitching, making sure you take that like a game. So when your time comes, you're ready to perform and you're ready to help a Major League Baseball team win a game.
Yeah.
Was what I got really good at doing because of teammates like Joey Votto really caring about me and letting me know like how I could be really good at baseball. You know?
Well, you mentioned, you know, being in Texas, did you have a favorite stop after Cincinnati or a memorable moment you'd like to share?
I mean, I have to go with the A's. I feel like that was such a big pivotal part of my career when Billy Beane called me up and said, we've been trying to get you for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had just read Moneyball a couple of years ago, and I'm part of it. But that was pivotal. But the most memorable baseball moment of my life is playing in Dallas Braden's perfect game.
Okay, yeah.
In 2010 on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. The Mother's Day before, in 2009, I hit my first major league home run off of Adam Wainwright, which should be my most memorable moment of my life, right? It was on Mother's Day too. But the next Mother's Day, Dallas Braden throws that perfect game. And that just was unbelievable. And in Oakland at the Coliseum, it was really special.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, we spoke a little bit about, you brought up Joey Votto. I want to go down through a couple of your Reds teammates, if you don't mind. The story you just told about Votto, you know, totally understandable now as we look back on his amazing career, but he would have had to tell you that, you know, you're around the same age. He wasn't in the big leagues that long. He kind of shared that with you. Did he have that kind of presence though? Obviously he was really cerebral, it feels like. So he probably had that kind of presence about him.
Yeah. Like you said, really cerebral, intellectual, that sixth tool. Mm-hmm. Just knowing the game like a chess master almost, you know, like just the art and science of the game. He had it down. He's got it down perfectly. And just that leadership, that kind of like that, like, you know, he didn't speak too much, but when he did, everybody would listen kind of thing, you know. And for me, I just had a really good relationship with him. I just think he appreciated the way I played the game. He appreciated where I came from. And he just kind of like, I felt like he was looking out for me, you know, in a sense. Like, he really cared that I was his teammate.
Yeah. You know, I guess we've already talked about some of these other guys when we were talking about AAA and things like that. What about Brandon Phillips? You know, the athleticism at second base, you know, a natural shortstop gets moved over to second. You had to appreciate that, I assume, given your growing up as a shortstop.
Yeah, and just the way his good energy that it brings to the field, you know. Yeah. He just lights up a room. His big smile lights up a room, you know. And just the way he plays the game, smooth, with style, like, A lot more kids play like that nowadays, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always try, like, not that I try to do that, but, like, you kind of, like, you watch a guy like that, you're like, dang, that's smooth. I wish I was more – let me try to do that. And I try to do it. I'm like, man, I just made 3 errors in 2 games. I can't do that.
Yeah, like going between the legs or exactly. – I mean, but sometimes he'd make those plays, and it wasn't because he could showboat and do it. It was because that's what called for in the moment. Yeah. But it's like he's got to be practicing just for that moment.
Like, there's no question. Just the confidence. It's like what kids do on the playground. You know, that he was just confident to do it in a Major League Baseball game when the game was on the line.
Like, yeah, I mean, I see my kid on the driveway basketball court, he'd go into behind the back. I'm like, you right. can't make that pass. Like, why do you keep doing that? And actually, he did make it in a game a few weeks ago. And I'm like, all right, whatever.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Hey, I guess I can't get off here without asking you. You've got this awesome wall behind you.
Yeah.
I can see Pujols and Ricky Henderson, certainly.
Yeah, well, I got Votto up there, too.
Oh, there's Votto, and yeah, okay.
Trey, Mark McGuire was my hitting coach. He was the bench coach in San Diego. And you got Bruce. I got Bruce's New York jersey. I was in New York. We're playing against him in New York, and I just asked for his jersey, and he signed. They all write, like, really special messages.
Yeah.
And then I got another room. I got, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, probably my favorite teammate of all time.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter and then Sean Dunstan. And yeah, my wife and I got to do this. We put together the office. It's really special. She's got all the tickets. We have this glass table that I got my laptop on right now that she collected all. She kept all of our tickets from all the games that she was there to watch me play. And it comes out to be almost 600 tickets. So she got to enjoy a lot of baseball, and her and her family love baseball. So it's really cool. All the stuff that we have in here is really
absolutely. What I guess, if you don't mind, just picking a few, especially like a guy like Ricky Henderson, you're involved with the Athletics, but his career was kind of, you know, coming to an end as you got, you know, you went off to college. What's Ricky Henderson mean to you?
I love his story, the way he and just the way he played the game. I always was drawn to him when I was a kid. Just Ricky Henderson, those neon batting gloves, like it just you know, little. I don't know. I thought it was cool, you know, and I got to hang out with him a lot. I mean, hang out like in the clubhouse, you know, he would play cards with us, and just the confidence that he has is like, man, I wish I could just take a piece of that. And just, I don't know. He just loves the game. He was around us a lot. And I just asked him to sign a jersey. And a lot of the stuff that we have in the office, I forgot what I was collecting. I'm not a big collector at all.
Okay.
Like, I'm really not. I just kind of like, there's moments in the where I was like, oh yeah, I probably should ask if I can have a jersey.
Sure.
And it just so happened that Ricky was one of them that I asked. But
what are the photos with the jerseys? Are those just
the highlights of there? You can just see.
Yeah. Okay.
I just put them to, redesigned them and put them together, and just I don't know, we just thought it was pretty neat to do. And we got my jerseys, all the teams I played for over here.
Oh, that's awesome. You know? Yeah.
And my big one, the big one is the Cincinnati jersey. I have my first home run bat.
Okay.
Definitely not sure if you want a tour, but I can give you a tour.
No, go ahead. That's awesome. All right.
Because this is the one I'm really proud of. Like, this is like a dusty. Let me see if I get a light right here.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
So we got the first home run bat, the first home run ball, first hit, and then all the cards that Dusty Baker saved for me. Like my major league debut. And the first time I played at Wrigley Field. So.
Yeah, my impression of Dusty from the outside looking in, he's just so thoughtful, it seems like. And him saving those, like, you know, you maybe just came up. And certainly people understand how important debuts are and things like that. I get that. But he's got a lot going on, right? I mean, he's trying to manage a big league ball club. And yet he's like, hey, I bet Rosie would. And first of all, that's the first person I ever heard call you Rosie. I know it's kind of your nickname. But he's like, hey, I want to save this for him. I mean, that had to mean a lot.
It's so special to me and to my family. And it reminds me to pay attention to detail for whoever I surround myself with in my life. I mean, I'm probably the worst at it, but like, it encouraged me to get better at really paying attention and listening to people, because Dusty was great at that. And
sure.
Yeah. Like every time I bring somebody in, you know, there's a family that comes visit us or friends in the neighborhood, they come and see this stuff. And they, you know, I always talk about Dusty Baker, you know, you can see his signature right on the card and the little note he put exactly like, what is it? My first hit or first, it's like a special, like a detailed note. Like it was a 2-0 count. You got a base hit to center field. Right. So like it's like you said, he has a ton of stuff going on, but how much he really cares about his players is just really special to me.
Sure, sure. Well, hey, I guess last thing I'll talk to you about, if you don't mind, what you're doing now. As you mentioned earlier, you've been kind of the I guess, well, technically like the rookie league or the complex league manager for the A's organization for a couple of years now. Tell me a little bit about that and then kind of what's coming up this baseball season.
Yeah, so I got to be the manager for the rookie league for the last 3 years, and I loved it. It was probably one of the biggest challenges of my life. I think I'd rather be hitting a slider than managing. But it was a really good challenge for me to do that, and I appreciate Ed Sprague as the farm director for the Oakland A's right now.
Former Blue Jay, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. And just for him sticking with me for those 3 years of letting me understand what it really takes to be a manager and to develop like that as a coach. So now I know like all the different ins and outs of what it really takes to be a manager at this level. I know it's completely different going up.
Sure.
With that said, now I'm going to be just like a bench coach, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm doing hitting, infield, base running, some outfield probably, which makes me more of like a utility coach, right?
Yeah.
That I can kind of cover everything and, you know, I have that experience. But it is so I'll be down here because we're raising our kids here in Arizona, mm-hmm. which is really special for me to have this gig as well with the Oakland A's. But it's really neat because we get to work with, last year was 100% Latin American players that come from the academy in the Dominican Republic. And it is really neat to connect with them and to learn their culture and to their young men that are just hungry to succeed. And it's just really neat to help them develop the best we can. You know, obviously there's a lot of challenges that come with that, but it's a very rewarding challenge. And just to work with the great staff that we have here with the Oakland A's is really special too.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Do you have aspirations on climbing that ladder too? Or, I mean, is your goal to kind of stick around in Arizona with your family, or how do you see the next few years?
Yeah, I do have ambitions to do that. That's why, I mean, I like to read a lot of books about leadership. I like to read a lot of books about baseball, the mental side of the game. I like to study the different metrics of baseball because I do have that ambition to climb up and to be part of a World Series team. Mm-hmm. Like that was my number one goal. Like I said, my number one goal was to play one game
right
at Wrigley Field in the major leagues because I'm from Chicago. That was like my number one goal. But once I did that, I'm like, what's next? That was winning a World Series. I wanted to win a World Series so bad. That's what I took all my off seasons. I busted my tail or played winter ball because I was dedicated to win a World Series. But I didn't get to do that as a player, but I do have ambition to do that as a coach, you know, to be a part of a World Series team would be really special for my family and for myself. But at the same time, to be transparent, is that my World Series right now, you know, are my 9-year-old daughter, my 7-year-old son, and my wife. You know, that's what I'm playing for right now for me personally. So that's where I'll be, you know, God willing I get to stay here in Arizona, that there's mm-hmm. opportunity that presents itself for me as a coach here, but this is where I want to be to raise my family and to see my children and my wife.
Well, absolutely. Hey, Adam Rosales, I want to say how much I appreciate you taking the time this morning. I really appreciate you. And certainly I just, you know, that grind that you put yourself through day after day, year after year, you reap the benefits, like I said, over a decade in the major leagues, and just congratulations on a great career.
No, thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me on. It's great to chat with you.
All right. You have a great day, and thanks so much for tuning in, folks. Wait for the next time on Red Leg Roundtable.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.